Straight Talk is sponsored in part by California Medicare Advantage, a partnership of Community Hospital of Long Beach and the physicians of CareMore Medical Group.
Join us for tonight's edition of Straight Talk. And now your host, Art Levine.
Good evening and welcome to Straight Talk. We're delighted you're joining us this evening, and we're very honored to have as our guest for the entire show, Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, representing the 46th Congressional District. Dana, welcome back to Straight Talk.
Great to be here.
Congratulations on your primary victory. Dana defeated his primary opponent 86% to 14% for B1 Bob. It's a pretty resounding vote of confidence.
Well, people like the way I do things, and they like what I stand for, and Bob didn't live in the district.
Can't hurt. Let's talk about the major issue facing the country today, Congressman, and that is terrorism and our defense and the Iraqi war. Let me just throw it out to you with your initial thoughts on what we're doing and the success or lack of success that we're seeing.
Well, first of all, let's remember where this all started. It started with an attack on the United States, which resulted in the greatest massacre of American citizens, of just ordinary citizens, in the history of our country. So someone declared war on us and then massacred our people, and so we are at war. We're at war with radical Islam, and those people who are part of this radical Islamic movement that want to attack the West. And they are attacking the United States in particular because we represent, we are in the forefront of Western values today. And I think this president has proven himself unrelenting. We have, over this time period of a very short time, driven the Taliban out of Afghanistan with very few casualties in Afghanistan, both on their side and our side. We have Afghanistan well on the way to a democratic government compared to what anybody thought was ever possible.
Although the warlords still are regrouping in different
warlords
areas.
Warlords are on our side. Remember, the guys who kicked the Taliban out of Afghanistan, we only had about 1,000 troops. All of this talk about the warlords, those are the good guys.
But it's not a democracy outside of the capital.
Well, it's we are making a lot of progress. There's been a constitution agreed to. You have, and of course... There are problems of the yin-yang, but so much progress has been made that even beyond my expectations.
So the average Afghanistani, if that's the term,
right,
you think is better off today?
Absolutely. Okay. No doubt. And his future, and the future of his children, especially Afghani
women. Yes.
And, of course, not only did we rid them of the Taliban, but we rid them of Al-Qaeda. And remember, the Taliban were this religious group of kooks who are basically set up by the Saudis, the Wahhabi sect in Saudi Arabia. And they brought in the Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda are these radical Islamicists from all over the world. There were several thousand of them there in Afghanistan, using it as a base
training,
of operations.
Training camps.
Training, but also anybody who attacked the Taliban would end up being targeted by these foreign mercenaries who'd come in and cut their heads off. They're the ones who killed Commander Massoud and others. So the people of Afghanistan are dramatically better off, and they know
it. Well, let's turn to the Iraqi war now. Some people say that that was a diversion on the war on terrorism, that it was a war by choice, not of necessity.
No, what's happened in Iraq is that our president decided to have a long-term strategy rather than just a tit-for-tat type of we're going to get this guy or that guy in terms of this great challenge to Western civilization. Bin Laden, what he wants and what he wanted was a fight between Western civilization and the Islamic world, and all of the Muslims would then, you know, rally behind him. Well, our president has denied him that. And the most important element in the president's long-term strategy is offering the young people of Muslim countries a democratic alternative. And what could be better than Iraq than to offer that alternative? We're getting rid of a secular dictatorship, which was horrific, and trying to replace it with all of the people there of the various faiths and various factions, whether they're the Kurds or the Sunnis or the Shiites, with somewhat of a democratic government.
Not an easy task, though. A very challenging task.
Nothing that makes history is easy. And what we are suffering now, and the casualties we're suffering, are part in actually trying to succeed in implementing this long-term strategy. When the last president of the United States left office, 9/11 was well on the way. The last president of the United States kicked the can, so to speak, and left us with all of these problems rather than confronting and having any type of long-term strategy.
But in fairness, the country would not have supported a war on Afghanistan or Iraq until we were attacked domestically. There would not have been a consensus.
Well, there's something to say about that. However, there's something to say about, for example, the French and the British, when Hitler was coming to power, saying, well, the English and the French wouldn't have withstood a war against Germany. Well, they could have cut Hitler off from getting power. They could have, and they didn't
absolutely
do it. The last president of ours, Bill Clinton, could have cut off the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, but he did not.
Well,
without war.
We learned some things better in hindsight, no question about it. But so you fully support the effort in Iraq, but you would agree that the military invasion was a huge success.
Huge success.
Minimal casualties and over very quickly. But the post-war planning seems to have been very shoddy.
Well, look, because I support the goal and what the president's trying to do, doesn't mean that I'm closing my eyes to some of the shortcomings we've had. We've had a lot of shortcomings there. We had a lot of shortcomings in World War II. There were a lot of shortcomings in the Cold War. But that wasn't any reason to withdraw from World War II or pull back in the middle of the Cold War. And if Ronald Reagan wouldn't have stepped forward and made the stands he did, we'd still be fighting the Cold War.
So you believe that this will have a positive ending, that the country will not, Iraq will not descend into civil war, and that maybe at the end of your next term, assuming your reelection, which seems very likely, 2 years from November, that there will be some strong elements of democratic government in Iraq.
We need to make sure that when we are fighting this war on terrorism, this global war, that we do not come across as people who are a coward and will just run away from a commitment. If we are unrelenting, as the president is, going after these leaders, unrelenting in establishment, an alternative in the Islamic world to this radical Islam, we will win.
And other countries seem to have taken note, like Libya.
Sure.
They've publicly renounced
nuclears and terrorism out of the whole bit.
And Syria seems to be a little bit more forthcoming.
I think
now.
The Syrians, look, there are people.
And that's not an accident.
Well, that's not an accident. It's not an accident that the young people in Iran, for example, are emboldened now because America has shown courage. Anytime America does something, we give hope to people who are the oppressed.
And why are we hated so much in that part of the world?
Well, you know, every time you try to displace a corrupt, vicious dictatorship, there are at least 10% of the people of a country that profit by
a corrupt establishment. But why don't we hear from the 90% who have been liberated?
Isn't that frustrating? You know what? They just, in this life, there's a saying that we have in politics about people, you know, they give their whole life and trying to help people, and then they need them at one point rather than able to help them. They need the help of the people they've been helping, and they turn their back on them. They say, what is the fastest drying liquid known to man? Do you know what that is? Tears of gratitude. They just evaporate, just like that. Well, it's not. It's true here. It's true there. It's, unfortunately, the nature of the beast, of humankind.
Well said.
We have to do what's right. That's it.
Well said. And we'll be back with more of our discussion after these messages.
KKJZ-FM. Think jazz. Think KKJZ. 88.1 and 89.1 FM. Visit our website at www.kkjz.org.
Community Hospital of Long Beach is a name you have known and trusted for 78 years. A place where physicians and families are partners in wellness. Since 1924, we have had a reputation of providing patients and their families with the peace of mind that comes from knowing that their health and well-being is our only priority. When you have a choice, choose the best.
Need to spend time with your kids. It takes a man to be a dad.
AmericasLibrary.gov. Log on, play around, learn something.
Welcome back. We're continuing a conversation with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, representing the 46th Congressional District. Congressman, we now have a Department of Homeland Security. We are trying to harden different sites. Airlines have been hardened and all, but there's still enormous vulnerabilities in our open society. Do you think the administration has done enough to protect the homeland?
Yes.
A lot of people feel, for example, that like the port of Long Beach, L.A., which is in your district, is still quite vulnerable to terrorist
attacks.
Trains.
It is. But you can only do what you can do. We've done as much as can be done, and more should be done. But we can't criticize the administration for not doing enough because they've been moving at, when we have the society that we have, which is tremendously complicated, and just how you move containers through the ports, or what system you're analyzing them, what computer system does this or that, and all of these are so complicated, especially do that on a national scale.
But we spent billions to harden the airlines,
yeah.
And we have the Transit Security Agency folks that search our shoes and everything else.
Yeah.
But there's been precious little money to secure the ports, it's shockingly small.
Well, we have got...
And the port is a national security asset.
But we've got also, I think we had the technology at on hand to secure the airlines. And I think that in order to make the ports as secure as they need to be, that there needs to be a certain level of technology development. And I've been working with various people and various companies and various, I might say, governments. To see what we can do to develop that kind of technology.
Also, cities are complaining that they are not getting enough funding to help with the first responder program. And I think we all agree that if, God forbid, something happens, it's the people on the scene, police, fire, and paramedics and all, that will be the first responders. And the cities are crying out for help, and they don't seem to be getting it from the federal government.
Well, we have a $500 billion deficit. We must be spending it somewhere.
Well, not there, though.
On tax cuts,
that's where we're spending it.
Well, I would think that if we didn't have the tax cuts, our economy would be doing much more poorly, and we probably would have less revenue.
That's another debate.
But about the first responders here locally, I know that my office, at my direction, has been deeply involved in training first responders.
I should say the congressman is one of the few, if only, congressperson that has a national security staff person, Fadi Esmail,
right,
on your staff.
Right.
He focuses on that.
And that's all he does is, in fact, just this week we've had a training session of first responders, and we have trained over 3,000 policemen, firemen, National Guards, hospital workers and all the rest, first responders, over 3,000 people in our local area here in Southern California have been trained in these sessions so that they will know exactly what to do in case there's a chemical biological attack, exactly what to do if there is some sort of nuclear attack. Now, this training and this type of coordination didn't require a great deal of money. It just required somebody to show some initiative. Now, I'll have to admit, if we had left that up to some federal agency or some overall new government type of entity, that would it would probably cost, my guess, $25-30 million to do what we did. Just
well,
as
your
we
office,
took the initiative.
You are to be commended for doing that, because in a crisis we can't depend on police fire, because they're going to be stretched real thin, and people will have to help themselves and help each other.
Well, when we've got it, when we've arranged here locally, so the police and the fire and the National Guard and everybody else, and the local, I might add, local mayors and city councilmen and all the rest, will know exactly how to interact. And we have the radio frequencies, the actual hookups to Los Alamitos, which is the emergency center, which will be used with helicopters and everything
sure.
coming out. So we're doing well locally. And I would think that more people should be showing initiative on their own throughout the country rather than waiting for the federal truck to arrive and shoveling out the money.
Okay, if you want to get information about the programs that are being run through the congressman's office, we're putting up the telephone number at the end of the segment. You can find out about forthcoming first responder programs. I know that you've been very active on the question of the impact of the port traffic, problems on the 710. And when you were last a guest on our show, you mentioned something that was quite controversial then, but seems to have been adopted more broadly since, and that is non-peak loading, having the trucks on the freeways at night and incentivizing truckers and shippers.
All right. It always is easier to come to the congressman and say, we want to spend $3 billion widening the 710 freeway.
And displacing homeowners.
Right, and all the rest, and creating all sorts of havoc for years, rather than doing it it's easier to do that than it is to make sure you get everybody in a room and try to find an agreement on how to expand the hours so that the freeways that are now not being used at all for 10 hours a day or 8 hours a day, freeways are just vacant at late, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Let's try to get them used during those hours. And I made the stand. I said, I'm not going to support widening the freeway if we have not at least tried to find a way to modify the hours. And I think I was taken very seriously. People have responded to that.
And there are bills pending now that would do exactly
the
that.
Ports and the local governments have been working on this. And had I simply said, oh, yeah, I'll get you the money for that, none of that would have been done. And by the way, another aspect, again, easy way is let's ask for more federal money on port security. And I said, no, wait a minute. We're not just going to spend more federal dollars. That's all our money coming back anyway. And
you think the shippers should pay the extra money to incentivize off-peak loading?
I think the people who are sending containers through our ports, which we build the ports anyway, let's charge a fee on the containers, because 90% of the containers going through the ports are coming in. So let's let the people in Shanghai pay a fee to use our ports.
Now, the port people would say, well, the danger is that they'll divert to foreign ports, Mexico and Canada.
Yeah,
but you're not buying that.
No, I don't buy that at all.
Okay.
And let's let the people in Shanghai who manufacture all this stuff pay for that rather than having the American.
Well, security is a necessary cost of doing business.
Of course it
and
is.
They should pay
right.
the full cost of shipping that container safely.
Yeah, otherwise all we're doing is subsidizing people who go to China and manufacture things and ship them into the United States.
Okay, well, we can continuing this fascinating conversation with our congressman, but first we have to take a pause for these messages.
What is a hero? Are heroes born, or are they made? In after-school programs, your kids will uncover hidden strengths, discover they have the power to change their future, and find the hero inside themselves. Let us know you want after-school programs in your area. Call 1-800-USA-LEARN. After-school programs, helping kids find the hero within.
You know, we sing for millions of girls, but helping out in schools, that's the real deal, baby.
I know our love can multiply, 'cause you're the X and I'm the Y.
I'm the cute one, you know what I'm saying?
So, have you ever been backstage before?
Okay, guys, it's the abacus. It's an old school calculator. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Like the circle and the square, our geometry is a perfect pair.
Now, why should kids know about gravity?
Well, gravity holds them down.
I once was one, but now it's you.
I'm spinning out of control.
With the Red Cross to help prepare your community, you never know how many lives you might change. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all.
Welcome back. Congressman, the last few years have been years of widely publicized ethical abuses in the corporate field, whether you start with Enron, Anderson, Global Crossing, WorldCom, et cetera, et cetera. What's your view of the ethics of our business community?
I think the ethics of not just our business community, but I think the general ethics and standards have suffered. I think that a lot of people today accept a certain degree of not telling the truth in their own life, as well as accept businessmen not telling the truth. And when that happens, when you have that kind of moral decline, it's reflected first in the business community, where people are dealing with big sums of money. And we should also, we've seen a concentration of wealth. That makes, I mean, businessmen now think they should pay themselves hundreds of times more than what their workers make. What's fascinating, Art, is that who owns these companies? People forget that it's the retirement plans from the employees themselves that really own the majority of stock in all big corporations.
And we're seeing institutional investors, particularly the pension funds of university like CalPERS, playing a much more proactive role, like withholding support for Eisner and Disney and other situations as
well. I think that what we've got to do is try to make sure that people have more say when they own stocks, and even through these institutional investors. I personally believe, for example, we should evolve into an ESOP-type society where employees own a majority of share in their companies, and then they hire the bosses.
And that gets to the principle of accountability. Right. One of the problems has been boards of directors that don't really supervise, inside boards, friends on the board.
Right, and what we've done is this crisis we had with hostile takeovers. Remember 10 years ago how horrible it was, the enemy at the door or whatever it was.
Barbarians at the gate.
These hostile takeovers of these companies. Well, we set up the rules then so that these people who are on the boards of directors and the company, the people who now run the company, can use company money to defend themselves against their own stockholders.
Yep.
So we've created a monster. It was an unintended consequence. And I think the way out of it is for us to incentivize people to provide stocks for their own employees. I personally, for example, would advocate, and I think I have legislation that states this, that says that if the company will give money to their own employee, that their employee then does not have to pay income tax on the value of that stock. So thus, within a period of 10 years, you'd have employees owning their own companies, which is a good thing.
Well, we have a few minutes left, and I'd like to turn to some personal matters. I know that you're expecting a major change in your family in the next few weeks.
Right.
This is a bachelor who is married and is expecting triplets.
That's it. I thought that God was at a trade-off, that I was going to have this interesting life, you know, being a congressman and a journalist and
surfer,
and worked in the White House and such. And And that was going to be a trade-off for the fact I wouldn't be able to have a family. And then I met Rhonda, and she's a surfer, too, I might add. And we hit it off. And so she's considerably younger than I am. She's 34. And so now God has really blessed me. We're going to have a family, and a big one right there in one swoop. And so I'm feeling, I'm about as happy as I've ever been in my whole life.
Three future constituents.
Absolutely. Maybe Republican, I hope.
Well, congratulations. That is wonderful news. And you seem to have your priorities right, too.
Well, you know, it's I really feel like I've had public service now for a long time, and I'm going to continue in Congress as long as I think I can do that job without it taking away from raising my family. And when it does, if I feel that my family needs more time, I'll step down.
And I was impressed with Karen Hughes, the president's advisor, who left because her son was in high school and she wanted to spend more time. And yeah. She obviously is invaluable to the president, and she's coming back for the campaign. But she never intended to be in Washington. She served, and right. Her family came first.
Well, I spent 7 years in the White House. It's been 16 years now. And I would imagine when my kids get 5 or 6 years old, I got one boy and two girls.
You already know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the boy is named after my great...
Who's the oldest?
Well, we'll only have to worry about one birthday a year for these kids. That's lucky.
Yeah, so when they get to be 5 or 6, they can...
You know, if they need more of me at home, I'll be happy to leave and come back and be Mr. Mom.
Yeah. Well, Congressman, thank you for again joining us. Congratulations in advance to you and Rhonda. And... the fight continues to defend our country.
That's right. Let's hope that down the line, these kids who are coming in the world are going to live in a safe world rather than a world with 9/11s and people conducting terrorist attacks.
You have an extra dimension now to your responsibilities. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for being with us, and please join us next week for the next edition of Straight Talk. Good night, everyone.